I'll tell you something, Bill. You and I occasionally get sucked into some Twitter wars. You'll see people try and stirring up that hornet's nest that is the Twitter sphere. And I didn't think I'd see it from our next guest. I didn't think I'd ever see it from my former co-host and a guy who's still out there running the NBA show for 95.7 The Game, NBA Insider, my friend, and Utah Jazz fan, public enemy number one last night, Matt Steinmetz, joining us on the show. Steiny, what's going on?
Gentlemen, what's happening? OC, pleasure to be on your show, man. Thanks for having me.
No, it's great to have you on here, but under the circumstances, I feel like, you know, it's not ideal. I bring you on, my friend. I bring you on here to, I guess, try and give you a chance to plead your case with the Utah Jazz fans. Why are you stirring up the hornet's nest, my friend?
Well, you know, I tweeted something about the Jazz last night after their win. And I've been trying to think of the word to use all day with maybe the expression for what I tweeted. And what I've come up with is inartful. And what that means is that something's expressed awkwardly, but yet the greater truth remains.
Okay.
And so that's what I'll say. You know, I tweeted something about you. I hope maybe this last loss to Houston gives Jazz fans some perspective on the second half of the season. Clearly, the Jazz didn't play their guys. But I was talking about it more from a standpoint of, you know, covering the Golden State Warriors for over two decades, I've seen them put together a lot of stretches, second-half stretches that look good. But when you get them in the light of day, they can't withstand the test of time. I like the Utah Jazz. I don't think they're as close as some people think.
What do they need, Steiny? Like, I mean,
they need guards. I mean, look, I like Gordon Hayward. He's a nice player. Favors, good player. Gobert, very intriguing. But let's take Favors for an example. Very good player. He's been improving every single year he's been in the league. But I just happen to believe that in this day and age of the NBA, power forwards aren't as important as they used to be. The game is turning more and more in favor of perimeter players, the three-point shot, handling the ball, passing, doing all that kind of stuff. It's easier to defend a guy like Derek Favors now in this NBA than it is two really good guards. And I'm looking at Trey Burke. I like him. I like Alec Burks. I know he was hurt most of the year. I like him. Exum, long way to go. I just don't see a starter in their backcourt right now that's on the roster. And I just think in this day and age of the NBA, the guards are the hardest thing now to find, quality guards, even though everybody assumes that the two guard is a relatively easy position to fill. I don't necessarily agree with that in this day and age.
Are there exceptions to that sentiment that maybe there's a big man, a four or five out there that is more important than a good guard? Maybe it's not Derek Favors. That's not the argument I'm trying to make. But in a year where Anthony Davis came on and did such important things for the Pelicans, is he an exception to that rule?
No, I mean, honestly, Gobert is a very intriguing player. There's absolutely no doubt about it. But, you know, I'm not an analytics guy, but it's a small sample size. And when we're talking about someone who's going to be, I'm talking about an elite player on the front court level, you know, at the front court level, I mean, he's still got a long, long way to go, and there's no guarantee he's ever going to get there. And when I think of projects virtually never reach the potential everybody thinks they're going to reach. I bet you Gobert turns into a very good player. But I don't know if he's ever going to be an Anthony Davis, just because Anthony Davis is so much ahead of him in the skill game and in the nuances of how to play basketball. Again, Gobert is a smart player too. He picks things up very fast. I can tell that. But Anthony Davis is on a different level, and I don't know if a guy like Gobert can ever get there, even though that doesn't mean he's not going to improve and be a nice player.
Well, a lot of people, if you look at the improvement the Jazz made this year, especially in the last 3 months of the season, it was Rudy Gobert's improvement. Remember, he's second year in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Anthony Davis, third year in the NBA, and he's 22 years old, made vast improvements. I would disagree with that. I think Dante Exum is a guy. He's 19 years old, but if you watch the Jazz on a night-in and night-out basis, he was a guy that showed you flashes and glimpses. Next year will be the year to measure him just a little bit, but I think the Jazz have good pieces at both the point guard and at the center position, which are two great pieces to build on. I disagree with you, though. I don't like Trey Burke at all, and I think that he's been a big disappointment. However, Alec Burks, that's the guy who, to me, the jury's still out on.
No major quibble there. Like I said, I'm certainly not going to get on here and say Gobert's got nothing going for him. He's obviously a very intriguing piece. Exum, I got some concerns about Exum in terms of, you know, attitude, approach. Again, I'm not saying he can't do it, but to me, he's a question mark. He's a flat-out question mark. Trey Burke, you know, if you don't like him, that's fine. I consider him a backup. I don't think he's a starting point guard in the league. But I just think when you look around the league right now, you look at the players that are dominating is a touch too strong, but Curry, Thompson, Harden, Westbrook, if Kyrie Irving started to become a really on that level type of player, Chris Paul, the game is skewing toward players 6'6 and under. And right now, you know, what's Hayward, 6'7?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so I'm kind of making a joke, but the game's being skewed to players 6'6 and under, and I think the Jazz need a few more of those players.
Matt Steinmetz, our guest here, he stirred up a Twitter hornet's nest, being maybe with a maybe critical tweet of the Utah Jazz last night. He's on here with us talking about exactly what he meant by it. So we threw out a question at the beginning of the show today, Steiny, that at locker room cleanout, the Jazz players were saying, well, next year, you know, we made some strides this year. Next year, it's the playoffs. That's the goal. We got to get into the playoffs. It sounds like you don't think that's a reasonable goal for this team to have, or not a realistic goal for this team to have for next year.
I think it's a realistic goal, but I don't think it's a lock at all. It feels like I think Jazz fans think that the next step into the postseason is going to be. I mean, I don't want to say easy, but I think they think it's the next progression, and I'm saying not so fast. Gobert. All signs are good on Gobert. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not sitting here saying Gobert is nothing, but he's got to go through a full season and a full season in which he is the starting center and people respect him and people are going to give him their best. You know, on another level, I'm always scared of guys with his body type. I'm scared of Anthony Davis too, but that's not the point. But the West is hard. I mean, the Thunder are going to be better. The only team I see possibly slipping is Dallas, but I don't necessarily think if Utah comes back with the same team, they're necessarily going to get better. Obviously, there's free agency, but what guard are they going to be able to draft in the mid-team that's going to be able to help them right away? And I think the only guard they can kind of get in free agency is like a nice, solid guard, not a special type of guard. That's why I think the next step for them is going to be hard. I don't think it's something that can be taken for granted.
Are you finally a Steph Curry believer, Steiny?
I am. He's still got some weaknesses, but they are so mitigated by the way the Warriors play and by the way the game's played. In other words, yeah, the one criticism I had of Curry was that he wasn't a true point guard, that I didn't think you could have him run your team, make all the decisions, and be very successful, because he's not the greatest decision maker, and he turns the ball over. But what you know, what nobody accounted for was that the guy can shoot the three-point ball like nobody in the history of basketball has ever shot it, as far as I'm concerned. And he's got a backcourt teammate who can also shoot it in a way that few other players in the history of the game have shot it. And I mean, I don't take those two words lightly. These two guys shoot the ball from three-point range so much better than anyone ever thought a three-point ball could be shot, that they're skewing the entire game. And they're exchanging 3 points for 2 points constantly. And, you know, they'll foul on one end of the court, and the big man will hit one of the two free throws, and they come down and they hit a three. They're changing all the rules of the game because the three-point line is just so accessible to really good shooters, and I just think we're going to see more and more players like that. You just, you know, 3 points is 150% more than two. And I just think the Warriors have figured that out a little faster than a lot of other players, other teams, and they put a bunch of guys that can shoot that ball on the court at the same time.
What's the biggest obstacle or fear for the Warriors in this run in the playoffs, Matt?
I don't think there's two teams that can possibly beat them in the West. One is the Spurs, because I think the Spurs can out-execute them if the Spurs are really on their game. I think the Warriors are very good in the half court. I think their half-court defense is very good. But I do think if push came to shove, the fact that the Spurs have been together for years and years and years may trump the fact that the Warriors have only been together for a year or two, even though they're younger. Memphis is the other team. I think I don't think they can score enough. That's what I don't think they're going to be able to do. But if they can, they do have the type of team that can get the Warriors into foul trouble, maybe get Draymond Green with two quick ones, get Bogut into foul trouble, and then they can really start doing their damage with Zach Randolph and Gasol. But I just don't think they can score enough at the end of the day, the Memphis Grizzlies.
You've been to Salt Lake City dozens of times. I know that you actually like it here. You love going up to Park City, et cetera.
Love Utah. Love Salt Lake City. You know, I tweeted out that I'm a big fan of Grumpy's.
Grumpy's.
You saw tweeting back at me saying that place is so has been. You know, I remember the old protocol, right?
Yeah, the old protocol that hasn't been around for 5 years.
Maybe more.
Was it Squatters earlier this year? Enjoyed a nice few beers. They have that nice brewery. What's that really nice brewery down the street?
That's Squatters.
No, there's another one. I will say
the Wasatch Brewery.
That's correct. See, City Creek Canyon, OC. I mean, you want to talk about somebody who's tapped? Hey, OC, listen. You know how it is out here in California. You know how it is. If somebody mentions Utah, admit it. Sometimes people make fun. Admit it.
Not, well, they do.
If you do that, your boy Matt Steinmetz out here, I got Utah's back. That's a fact.
Hey, don't go backtracking now. You've done the damage, Steinmetz. You did it last night. You couldn't just keep your mouth shut and enjoy your little playoff run out there in the Bay Area. You had to poke the Jazz fans because they didn't make the playoffs. We know.
Utah's greatest unpaid ambassador, Matt Steinmetz. He's a fact. I'm telling you guys.
Were you shocked with the vitriol that came back at you from our sleepy little burg here in the mountains?
You know what? I got to say, I kind of was. I really was. I, you know, just kind of tweeted it and then got the response. And then I was like, then I looked twice at it and I was like, oh, yeah, I could see why they'd want to get on me for that. That was, you know, that wasn't exactly what I meant. But, you know, I can handle the negative feedback, but some of the profanity coming out of Utah, I don't know. I don't know about the profanity on Twitter.
Well, you know, the Twitter sphere is a very ugly place.
Yes, it is. But, you know, I like the Jazz. I just think I think they still got more work to do than people think.
You just don't think they're good. Real cool. Next fight's in Australia. You coming?
What's that?
The next fight's in Australia. Yeah, you coming?
How about this for Jazz knowledge? Yeah, you, me, and Joe English. How about that?
Yeah, him and
we go down there, we meet Bogut, and then we even try to hook up with Shane Heal and Andrew Gaze, and we get front row seats.
Why didn't you mention Andrew Bogut, who's right in your own backyard?
He did say Bogut.
Oh, did you say Bogut? Oh, okay. I didn't hear you say Bogut. Gotcha.
Bogut's my type of guy because he's got a sarcastic side to him that's pretty impressive, to tell you the truth. He's got an edge to him, Bogut.
Well, have fun out there. Enjoy this playoff run, which we all think will be a pretty deep one for the Warriors. And thanks for joining us, Steiny. Good talking to you. But next time you're going to try and upset Utah Jazz fans, just take like a five-second break before you push send on that tweet and reevaluate, okay?
Yes, sir. I will do that out of respect for you and out of respect for Utah. Hey, call me up during the playoffs. We'll talk Utah basketball and Warriors. I'm all into it.
Yeah, we'll do it. Matt Steinmetz, my former co-host, host of the NBA show on the 95.7 The Game in the Bay Area now.